developer of the anti-neoplastin cancer treatment. I should explain that neoplastics are cancerous cells. So we're talking about a cancer treatment, which is in fact a non-invasive treatment that works with our own growth-inhibiting peptides to control some forms of cancer. We'll explain how this works. He has been involved in an extremely long series of court battles with the FDA. Some of you may know about this. And this is although they have in fact approved anti-neoplastin therapy, they're now insisting in the 11th hour as they continue to drag him into court that he distribute his medication out of state without approval. He faces another hearing in May. Now, we were also supposed to have a Stephen Siegel, whose wife, Mary Jo, is a patient of Dr. Brzezinski's. She's been in remission from, you know, use of his anti-neoplastin therapy, and they are the founders of the Brzezinski Patient Group and Legal Defense Fund. Now, I've been unable to raise Stephen Siegel, which is unfortunate because Dr. Brzezinski only can be with us for about half an hour. Oh, did you get him? Didn't get him. Okay. So far, we don't have him. So we may not have Stephen Siegel, in which case we'll go as long as we can with Dr. Brzezinski, and then what we may have to do is open up the caller lines to people who just want to comment on what's going on. It's, again, when we do that, it'll be 510-848-4425, and that will be between 2:30 and 2:45. So bear with us. As usual, it's live radio, so we're not quite sure how it's going to fall out. But in the meantime, let me see if we have Dr. Brzezinski on the line. Dr. Brzezinski, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much for being there. Let me ask you, if we're unable to raise Mr. Siegel, will you be able to stay on just a little bit longer?
Sure, yes, I try.
Okay, so let's see how it goes. We may go a little longer. We'll see if we... unless are they signaling me? Are you signaling me in the... hello, engineers.
Lena, can you hear me?
Oh, are you there, in fact?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, this is very exciting. See that? There's just nothing like live radio. It's just so constantly exciting.
Yeah.
All right, well, let me describe who Dr. Brzezinski is for those of us who may be listening who actually have managed not to read the newspaper. Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski earned his M.D. and his Ph.D. in biochemistry at the Medical Academy of Lublin, and this is in Poland, in 1968. He is the youngest M.D. and Ph.D. in Poland's history. His doctoral thesis was about peptides he discovered that were deficient in the blood of cancer patients. From 1970 to 77, Dr. Brzezinski worked as a researcher at Baylor College of Medicine doing research on the anti-cancer activity of the peptides he had discovered. And in 77, he began treating advanced cancer patients with these peptides. Now, many of these patients that he treated are now still alive today. The anti-cancer activity of anti-neoplastins has been verified by a team of experts from the National Cancer Institute who reviewed the case of 7 hopeless, in quotations, brain tumor patients treated by Dr. Brzezinski. The NCI documented that all of the tumors shrank and that 5 of the 7 disappeared completely. Now, Dr. Brzezinski has been granted 5 INDS, investigational new drug exemptions, by the FDA, under which he is approved as the principal investigator for 72 phase 2 clinical trials of his drug. At the same time, the FDA's enforcement division, which lost a court case against Dr. Brzezinski in 1983, has spent tens of millions of dollars to stop research on anti-neoplastins. So again, I want to thank Dr. Brzezinski for taking time out from what is an exhaustive schedule to be with us. Let me briefly explain who Stephen Siegel is, who has also joined us and will probably be the person that most of the call-ins will speak to because Dr. Brzezinski has to get back to his practice. Mary Jo, Stephen Siegel is the husband of Mary Jo Siegel, who was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. This is a terminal cancer. In 1991, physicians at USC and UCLA, Stanford, and the Dana Farber Institute in Boston, all told the Siegels that there was no conventional treatment that they could use to cure Mary Jo's disease. Now, within 1 year of treatment with Dr. Brzezinski's anti-neoplastins, she was pronounced in remission by her oncologist at UCLA, as well as by Dr. Brzezinski. Her remission lasted until 1995, when some enlarged lymph nodes indicated a possible reoccurrence of the disease. She started on treatment in 95, and the Siegels, she started on treatment again, and within 6 months was in remission, with no side effects from the treatment. In 95, the Siegels founded the Brzezinski Patient Group in Pacific Palisades, California, and after the FDA pressed for an indictment of Dr. Brzezinski, they founded the Brzezinski Legal Defense Fund to raise money to provide for legal fees and to help change the laws in Congress. Both Stephen and Mary Jo have appeared on numerous TV and talk radio shows and have testified before the House Subcommittee for Investigation and Oversight and argued for a change to be mandated by the FDA. I had a friend call me. He knew I was doing the show. He called me to give me a quote by Dr. Benjamin Rush, who was a Revolutionary War hero and signer of the Declaration of Independence. I think that it's very ironic that Dr. Brzezinski left Poland partially in order to have some freedom with his work and has ended up in this predicament. The quote, now again, this is one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. This is what he said back then. Unless we put medical freedom into the Constitution, the time will come when medicine will organize into an undercover dictatorship to restrict the art of healing to one class of men and deny equal privileges to others. This will constitute a bastille of medical science. All such laws are un-American and despotic. So we're in a pickle here. I'm just wondering, Dr. Brzezinski, how is it different here than in Poland? My sense is that you're still a creative individual who is a maverick, and that what you've done is kind of break some of the inner circle rules, the political rules in medicine here, and you're being punished. How is this different from what you escaped from?
Well, you see, as far as medical freedom in Poland, when I was still there, compared to freedom in this country, the difference is that even the communist government will not prevent dying cancer patients from receiving any treatment which is available.
So the irony is that, in fact, in Poland, they wouldn't have denied the treatment to
You're
people.
Right. As a matter of fact, you would have more medical freedom than here, okay? As long as you don't oppose the government. As a matter of fact, I have witnessed many actions by the government when they did whatever they could to get the medicine from the other end of the earth, okay, to bring to the patient who was badly sick, okay? So in this area, the communists did not interfere, even though this was a centralized government, but they did not attempt to regulate doctor practice from the capital of the state, okay? They did not tell the doctor, you have to use, for instance, so many laboratory tests per week, you have to use such a dose of the medicine, you can treat only this type of patient, but you are not allowed to treat the other. So this was still left up to the doctor. So there was certain freedom in this area. And here, unfortunately, this attempt of the central agency to control medical practice, to tell the doctor really what he has to do with the patient, whether the patient can be treated or not. And this is fundamentally wrong, because bureaucrats, they are good for certain purposes, but they are not good to treat people. Who wants to be treated by federal agents or judges or lawyers, okay? We need good doctors to do the job, okay? And the doctors should have a freedom, because this is very important task. This is human life at stake. If you don't make right decision, if you have to ask the agency Washington if you're allowed to use this medicine or the other, or if you can do the blood test now, or you have to do it in the next day, the patient will die, okay? So this should be left up to individual doctor and patient. The central government should not interfere in this.
Yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
And that's what I found when I ultimately was under FDA scrutiny, and currently my practice is completely controlled by the FDA. I'm trying to do whatever I can under the circumstances and still have good results in the treatment of our patients. But I believe that medical freedom should be preserved. And unfortunately, democracy and freedom is not something which you have for granted. You have to fight for it. Because if you don't, there are always attempts of certain agencies or certain people to take your freedom away. But I believe that America is still the leading democracy in the world. And ultimately, democracy and the freedom is going to win. We may have some setbacks from time to time, but we are still moving forward, and so we can still exercise our rights.
I want to be careful that we don't use up our time with you talking about the case, because what we can do is after you go back to your important practice, we can go over some of this with Stephen. Particularly, what I want to reassure people about is that I've read all the materials, and you know, I even have a letter from one of the jurors that was working on the federal case, who is outraged because she said, "There's no case here. There's no case against this man." In fact, one of the things that she said also is that the prosecutors couldn't even find one witness who would say anything defamatory about Dr. Brzezinski's character or his medical. Not one person complained about the medical treatments. Everybody was just in support. And in addition, it says, this is a quote from Darlene Phillips, "One would think after 4 years of preparing for this trial that they would have at least one disgruntled patient, former employee, business associate, or colleague who had something negative to say about him." So it's a very thin case. It looks as though what you've done is step on the toes of certain individuals, and it looks as if there's an economic problem here, too, in terms of getting approval to do protocol stuff, even though you, in fact, got all the approval and followed anything. So we can talk about why the FDA is acting so oddly with Stephen. What I want to do in the next few minutes is have you explain a little bit about, the story of how you discover the neoplastins is one of those stories that you read that gives you chills, because, in fact, what you did was you didn't accept the way things were. You looked deeper. So can you explain what led you to the discovery of the anti-neoplastins?
As frequently in medical science, you stumble upon something coincidentally. I was involved in the research on amino acids and peptides in blood, and I discovered some new peptides, which in lay terminology you can compare to small proteins, which existed in blood. And then I was interested to see if there are some changes of these peptides in the blood samples taken from people who had different illnesses, for instance, not necessarily cancer, but a heart attack, kidney failure, and cancer patients also were some of these individuals from whom I took the blood samples. And I found that the most striking deficiencies of these peptides existed in the blood samples taken from cancer patients. This led me to believe that perhaps there is some relationship between these peptides and occurrence of cancer. And that's what I attempted to prove.
Okay, so what you were proving is that in cancer patients, it looked as if they were deficient in something that exists naturally in the body.
That's correct. And I was interested to find out what these particular chemicals, these peptides, were doing, how they were acting on cancer cells. Of course, there was certain basic research which could be done to prove it, and I found that some of these peptides, they have very strong activity against cancer, but they did not inhibit normal part of the body, which is something highly unique in early 70s. Of course, at that time, nobody knew about genes involved in cancer, about oncogenes, about tumor suppressor genes. All of this was still to be discovered. And as we progressed in our research, we found that these peptides, which are named antineoplastins, they are regulators of the genes, which are at the baseline of creation of cancer cells. They are turning off the genes which are stimulating cancer growth, and they are turning on the genes which should get rid of cancer cells. So,
okay.
So they work like molecular switches. They turn off simply the current. Electrical current inside our cells, and especially cancer cells, and they don't allow the cancer cells to multiply because of that. It's as simple as like turning off the switch. You turn off the switch, and electricity won't flow anymore, and the entire machinery will start. And the same happens to cancer cells in our body. They don't multiply anymore, and they be sentenced to die. they will die because of activation of the mechanism which exists in our body, which is called programmed cell death, which again is regulated by tumor suppressor genes. So once you unleash such forces which exist in our body, you can get rid of cancer. The problem is that various types of cancer have various genes involved, and also various chemical switches, various antineoplastins are involved in regulation of these genes. So the question is to discover all of these things, find out how they work, and then use them in the treatment.
Okay, so what we're saying is that that people in general will have some of these switches which will help to convert cells back to healthy cells, that people normally have them. Some people, is the genetic link that some people genetically do not have as many, or is the genetic link yet another marker?
Well, genetics play a very important part, and in some patients we simply have the information encoded in the genes, which could lead to formation of the cancer. But in many patients, we have different mechanisms. It's simply a blockage of the genes, which would protect us against cancer. And if you know how to unblock these genes, then you can get rid of cancer. So we may not necessarily carry mutation from our parents, which would lead to cancer. We can lead simply certain information how to block the gene, and the gene is still there, and if you know how to unblock this, the gene can help you to get rid of cancer, and that's what we are trying to do.
Okay, just very quickly, for people who may have just tuned in, this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman. I'm on the phone with Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski, the inventor and developer of the anti-neoplastin cancer treatment, which is, as we were saying, it is a switch which exists within our body already, and the idea is to reintroduce it in people who don't have a high enough level, and that this treatment is in fact saving lives, although Dr. Brzezinski is caught up in quite a medical legal battle with the FDA, and we'll discuss more of that when we start taking callers. Dr. Brzezinski, can individuals be tested to see what their levels of anti-neoplastins are?
Sure, we developed such testing, and many years ago, we found that practically all cancer patients have deficiency of antineoplastin. So for our cancer patients, we don't do it routinely because we see very advanced cancer patients. And then, of course, practically all of them have deficiency of antineoplastin. When their body defense is reconstructed again, when they get rid of cancer, then they will have normal concentration of antineoplastins and they can fight cancer on their own.
Well, I'm wondering if it could be a test that could be done as a prophylactic treatment in the future, if you
definitely, this will be our step in the future. We would like to find out who is deficient. We would like to simplify our testing procedure so it can be done easily, and then offer prevention to such people. For instance, if we don't have yet full-blown cancer, there may be a way to unblock the genes which protect us against cancer by using small doses of antineoplastins. For instance, these people can take a few capsules a day to unblock the genes which would protect them against cancer. And then we should not have cancer in the future in these patients. So this is a very important task, probably even more important than treatment of people who have advanced cancer. But we have to do a step at a time. At this moment, we are limited by the FDA to the treatment of patients who are very advanced, who cannot be cured by any existing method. And once we prove the point that we can successfully treat such patients to the FDA, then I believe we move ahead with preventive projects.
This treatment does not work for... this treatment does not work for all cancers. Is that correct?
Well, there's a very diverse group of diseases which we call cancers. At this moment, we are running 72 different clinical trials, which means that in each of these trials, we have a group of patients diagnosed with a different type of cancer. And various cancers have different genes involved. And to really regulate these genes, we need different antineoplastins.
Oh, okay. So you just need to...
I believe that in the future, we'll be coming up with new antineoplastins, which will work on the new types of cancers, where today we don't have yet good results. I believe this is just a matter of time.
Okay, now again, what you've done is you've isolated a substance that exists in the body naturally, that exists in lower levels in people who have cancer, and what you're doing is reintroducing the substance, and it works as a biochemical switch to cause the cancer cells to stop, to behave differently. What I'm wondering is, your source of the material at this point is you're using the amino acid glutamine, and you're doing it, you're sort of synthesizing it from an, I mean, it's a simplistic thing to say that you're using glutamine. The original source was that you used, and because this is some of the sort of bad press that you've gotten, that because our blood and our urine both have organic materials that are natural to the body, you synthesized the original antineoplastins from urine, is that correct?
Well, initially we isolated them from blood. Of course, you can as well isolate them from the liver, from the brain, from variety of organs in the body, but it was more convenient, of course, to isolate them from blood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And however, blood is a very difficult material to get, so we found that we can also isolate them from urine. But after we determined chemical structure of some of the simplest antineoplastins, and these simplest antineoplastins are amino acid derivatives and some organic acids, we attempted to synthesize them. So really, since 1980, we are using mostly synthetic antineoplastins. We are not using any antineoplastins at present isolated from blood and urine. All of our antineoplastins are synthetic. Of course, in the future, we'll be determining the chemical structure of some other antineoplastins isolated from blood and urine, and then synthesize them and use them in the treatment. So this is an ongoing project. It looks like we are talking about a large family of chemicals. It's like, for instance, when penicillin was discovered, nobody expected that years later he would have hundreds and hundreds of different antibiotics. We believe that we'll be having tens or maybe even hundreds of different antineoplastins in the future, and they may have different activity on various cancers.
You know, what it makes me wonder about is that there's been so much discussion that puts emphasis on the individual in terms of behavior, saying that, you know, you're supposed to eat this way and you're supposed to live this way to avoid cancer. What you've discovered kind of turns all of that on its ear. When I read that you used glutamine, one of the things that occurred to me was whether you think there is any dietetic or nutritional link to cancer protection. I mean, is glutamine a good prophylactic supplement to take?
Well, glutamine alone works reverse. A lot of glutamine will really stimulate the cancer growth.
Whoops.
What we are using amino acid derivatives which contain glutamine in the structure, inside the molecule, but we are not using free glutamine, because free glutamine, too much of the glutamine, may stimulate the growth of some cancers. But using glutamine derivatives, the chemicals which contain glutamines inside the chemical structure, may inhibit the growth of cancer. So this is a different way around. But the diet, obviously, may contain some of the antineoplastins, because they may exist in some plants, and our nutrition may contain some of the antineoplastins. So the question is to analyze various products to find out if they contain antineoplastins and which of them will be the most appropriate to eat. But this is, of course, something for the future. We don't know this yet, and we are very busy seeing patients now, so we will need to really spend some time in the future to determine what kind of diet will be the best from this point of view.
Okay. When you say too much glutamine, what are you talking about? Because glutamine is used in therapeutic doses for problems with irritable bowel. And
a ratio between glutamine and the other amino acids. If you have much more glutamine versus the remaining amino acids, such type of diet may stimulate the growth of some cancer.
That's very interesting.
But if you have the right ratio with glutamine, if you don't have excessive amount of glutamine versus the other amino acids, then it's perfectly all right. Okay,
That's interesting.
It depends really on the ratio between glutamine and the other amino acids.
Gotcha.
It was not my observation. This was really initiated by researchers in Sweden, in Karolinska University, who found that a ratio between glutamine and the other amino acids, which is given preference to glutamine, may stimulate the growth of cancer cells. But on the other hand, the right amount of glutamine may speed up the healing process, and it's important, for instance, in the nutrition, in the recovery of the patients who underwent surgery.
Mm-hmm. There's a connection in your research between the cancer that you've had very good luck with, liver and breast cancer, prostate cancer, and the lymphomas, some of these things. But you've also been working on the connection to other diseases like AIDS and autoimmune diseases like lupus and MS and rheumatoid arthritis. We're running out of time, but I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about what the hopeful, sort of add something hopeful for people who are suffering from autoimmune disease in terms of using antineoplastins.
Well, antineoplastins help to eliminate abnormal cells. In autoimmune disease, you have abnormal population of lymphocytes, which are formulating immune response where we should not have immune response. For instance, we may fight our own organs, like, for instance, joints, nerves, etc. And this may lead to various autoimmune diseases, which are very tough to treat. We have one project, which is approved by FDA, to treat people who have advanced autoimmune disease with antineoplastins, and we already have some successes. And again, what we are trying to do is to eliminate abnormal cells, abnormal lymphocytes, which otherwise would produce a response against your own body. So this is how it may work. And in a certain way, the pathway, the signaling pathways, the electrical currents which are flowing inside the cell have certain similarity in autoimmune disease and in cancer cells. But of course, the dosage is different. The approach to treat immune disease is much easier than the treatment of cancer. We are using smaller dosages. We are using medicine given orally rather than in the injection.
Dr. Brzezinski, I'm reluctant, but I want to let you go back to your work. I can hear you working in the background as we speak. What I'm going to do is thank you very much for your appearance. And what we'll do is we'll wait until I'll talk to Stephen for another 15 minutes, and we'll go over the FDA case before we take phone calls. So we're not going to take phone calls until 2:45. We are going to take a brief musical break here for about 30 seconds, and we'll sort of switch gears, and then we'll come back with Stephen Siegel. Dr. Brzezinski, keep fighting the fight. I don't know what any of us would do without individuals like you who are fearless and brilliant, and I just thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I would like to thank you very much for your support. We received tremendous support from American people, and that's why we are going to win. I have no doubt about it.
I think you are going to win, and we will discuss what people can do to help, and we will help.
Thank you very much.
So, Godspeed. Thank you so much.
God bless.
Okay, so what we're going to do is take a brief musical break, and we'll come back with Stephen Siegel, and we'll talk about what's going on with the FDA, and then at 2:45 we'll take your calls. So hang on for a brief break. We'll be right back. This is your own health and fitness talk show with health integration specialist Lena Berman on KPFA. Welcome back. This is your own health and fitness talk show on KPFA. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman, and we've been interviewing Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski, inventor of the antineoplastin cancer treatment, which is creating quite a fuss in the government with the FDA, and which has also saved many people's lives. What we're going to do now for the next 15 minutes before we take your calls at 2:45 is to talk with one of the founders of the Brzezinski Patient Group and Legal Defense Fund, Stephen Siegel. So you're on the line with us, are you not?
Yes, I am. Hi, Lena.
Thank you for listening to the interview with all of us. As I mentioned before, Stephen Siegel is the husband of Mary Jo Siegel, who was treated for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma by Dr. Brzezinski and is in remission despite the astonishment of every doctor she went to at all of the top places in California, who told them there was no hope. What I wanted to talk to you about, among other things, is I want people to get information at the end of this 15 minutes about how to contact you to help with the Legal Defense Fund. But, you know, it's daunting to read the materials about what's going on with the FDA, and you and I talked about this a bit. The confusing part is that, you know, Dr. Brzezinski is a maverick, and in a certain way, I think my impression is that he kind of broke some unspoken rules. Not real rules, but unspoken rules, like he couldn't do the research on animals because these anti-neoplastins have to go human to human. So he went ahead and started to treat human beings, which is a little risky with the FDA, but in fact, in the end, he did get approval.
Correct.
How did he get into trouble? How did they manage to make a case? It's a very thin case, but how did they manage to keep dragging him into court? It's amazing.
Here's what it is, and I'll try to be as brief as I can. I got carried away in a speech the other night and went on for 2 hours.
No, yes, we have 15 minutes.
Yeah, my wife just really let me have it after that. So I'm going to try to give you this sort of Reader's Digest version.
Okay.
The FDA, Dr. Brzezinski was a lead researcher at Baylor University when he first came to this country, and he was on that team for about 7 years. He had something that he knew had to be basically tested on humans, and so he took what would be the most acceptable to the FDA, and those were people that were on their deathbed. These were advanced brain tumor patients. These were people that had literally days to live. They had been told to go home and die by conventional medicine, and this is back in the late 70s, from about 77, 78 on. And he started having some dramatic results. This went on until 1983, when finally the American Cancer Society became aware of his work, and they publish a list every year called their List of Unapproved Cancer Treatments, and they put anti-neoplastins, Brzezinski's drug, right at the top. Well, that immediately alerted the FDA, and the FDA moved in to shut Brzezinski's clinic down. It's down in Houston, Texas, saying that he was shipping this drug out of state, it was not approved, and he had no right to be treating people. And so they took him to court, federal court at that time. And it was the first time, I believe, in the history of this type of enforcement on the part of the FDA that they had ever lost. The federal judge in that case said that Dr. Brzezinski was acting legally, treating patients legally, and could continue to do so as long as he did it solely within the state of Texas. Once he would ship his medicine outside of the state of Texas, it became interstate, and at that point, federal rules would control what he did, and the FDA would have jurisdiction. So it was the first time that the FDA had been beaten in court, and Dr. Brzezinski continued to practice, continued to treat patients like my wife, who would fly from all over the country to be treated in Houston. Now, it took them 13 years, and, you know, to use the term vendetta, I'm going to use it because there are individuals within the legal department, the enforcement division of the FDA, who are still on this case today. They were on this case in 1983, and they're still there today. But it took them 13 years until November of 95 to come up with the theory that by my wife and I and 400 other patients who lived in other states outside of Texas, going to Texas, picking up the drug, and taking it back with them, in our case, back to Los Angeles, that we entered into a conspiracy, or I should say that the doctor entered into a conspiracy with his dying cancer patients to ship an unapproved drug in interstate commerce by the patients taking them back. And that's what this case was all about. That's it in a nutshell.
Well, you know, the feeling I got when I read the materials, I have was sent a lot of materials from Dr. Brzezinski's office and also his marketing firm. One of the things that occurred to me is what I said earlier, which is that there is usually a payoff for this kind of behavior. Some of it, as we discussed on the phone, is that sometimes when an organization, a large organization, goes forward... Oh, I should mention, incidentally, before I sort of slam the FDA here, that I called the FDA on your suggestion with the name of the person and got hold of him, and everybody was very polite and very cooperative and very friendly, mm-hmm. and assured me that they would send me all kinds of materials, which they never sent.
Mm-hmm.
So what my sense is that what I've observed about human nature is that sometimes when people have already stepped into the quicksand, and they have a commitment to the quicksand, they'll defend it even as they're going down. I mean, that there's a sort of saving face thing that happens. But
that's a very logical conclusion on your part.
But there is
there's a lot of that going on.
There's also an economic thing which is ominous, which is that a lot of the there is an interrelationship with the major hospitals that treat for cancer and the pharmaceutical companies that produce chemotherapy. So
that's correct.
There's a very ominous kind of thing that goes on there, which is kind of a good old boy, I will say, good old boy network here.
Yeah, if you, I can refer you to the work of Ralph Moss.
Yeah, of course. I've actually tried to get on the show, and
he's
real hard to get. Yeah.
And Ralph Moss will, pretty much points the finger at the pharmaceutical industry and what he calls the cancer industry. And basically, what it boils down to, and these are updated figures from Ralph Moss. These come from a variety of sources, but what the pharmaceutical companies produce in the way of chemotherapy drugs. Last year was in gross billings was $13 billion. Now that's what goes out to hospitals, to doctors, to pharmacies around the country. Then that in turn is marked up and the treatment, you know, gets filtered down, and when it finally gets to the patient, that $13 billion is turned into about another $110 billion. Now add to that what radiation therapy produces in the way of revenue. You have about 1,800 of these radiation, these GE9000 scanners around the country that administer radiation therapy, which is kind of an oxymoron in itself. But there are thousands of these things, let's say. And at, you know, a couple of million dollars a pop, and the gross billings for radiation therapy can run, you know, it probably in the neighborhood of another $30 to $50 billion a year. So what you're looking at is an industry that is probably the second or third largest industry in the United States behind the oil industry and the auto industry, and that's the cancer treatment industry. Gross billings of about $200 billion a year.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not ascribing evil motives to anybody here. There are a few individuals that I will, but I'm not saying there's a conspiracy out there. I certainly don't mean to imply that. But there is a paradigm, a manifest thought that has allowed this to grow up, and it's all harbored with the help of the drug companies, the hospital gopolises, the cancer research centers, and the pharmaceutical industry, which says the only way we're going to allow cancer to be treated in this country is surgery with follow-up radiation and chemotherapy. So these guys make the rules. They're very powerful. They make the rules. And anybody that comes along that tries to play the game a little differently, like a Dr. Brzezinski, is immediately branded as a quack, as a medical outcast, as a charlatan, and they do whatever they can to relegate him to a shelf somewhere in the back closet. And in Brzezinski's case, they've gone as far as to try to put him in prison for the rest of his life.
Yeah, but, you know, it's very interesting because I was definitely, as much as I was sort of horrified by what I was reading, I was also reassured because particularly this letter from Darlene Phillips, one of the jurors, they don't really have a case and they keep losing. So I think that Dr. Brzezinski will win with your help and everybody else's help. But, you know, we see this over and over again with medical treatments that are non-invasive.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a while, but we're going to break through.
I think
we're going to win. I mean, I'm going to be doing a show soon on the ketogenic diet, which is a treatment for epilepsy, which involves just changing diet for a period
simple.
Of time. Right.
This is the high-fat diet,
Well, it's high-fat and high-protein, and it's intended only for use as a therapeutic period, during a therapeutic period to shut off the epilepsy, and apparently it works. Point is that there are things, you know, there is a movement toward looking back to the body and reinforcing its own defense system. So just to keep up with you guys, Mary Jo is continued to be okay? I mean, she's
In fact, that's interesting. She went this morning. Timing is just great. She went this morning and saw her oncologist at UCLA, who has monitored her for the last almost 7 years now through all of this, and she's fine. She had a CAT scan done in December, and this was a follow-up to that, and she's fine. And she has monitored. She has now about three CAT scans a year. and she's doing very, very well.
And really, no side effects from the drug at all.
Virtually no side effects. There was, you know, to say there's zero, it's not quite. There is some fatigue. She was on the treatment, on the intravenous treatment for 20 months. And during that time, she would get fatigued. And every day, the way we dealt with that was about, you know, 11:30 in the morning, she'd have to take a nap for an hour. And then about 4 in the afternoon, again, she'd take another nap for about 45 minutes. But that's it, basically. Mm-hmm. There was no hair loss. There was no nausea, mm-hmm. no vomiting. She knew she was getting better almost from the first week mm-hmm. that she started. She mm-hmm. felt better. It's not like these invasive therapies and these toxic chemotherapies where, you know, where you feel miserable, and if you're not dying, you feel like you're dying.
Okay.
And then ultimately, you know, the statistics are not very promising for chemotherapy.
No,
and that's
not
the interesting mm-hmm. part of
it. No, it's not.
Yeah, just to, you know, enlighten your listeners, and this is what horrified me. If you ever saw me, and you and I have talked, and you know I'm probably about as straight-laced as they come. You know, I wear a coat and tie every day. I'm about as middle class and as normal and as average a person. And I would be the last guy you would think would be on the forefront of an alternative, you know, medical breakthrough. And we went to all of those places that you said, the UCLAs, the Stanfords, the Dana-Farber, and Harvard. And had anybody been able to say to us that Mary Jo was going to be able, had a 30% chance, a 40% chance of survival with these horrible treatments of radiation and chemotherapy, and then finally what they wanted to do was a bone marrow transplant, which is the most god-awful thing that you can imagine. At one point, this guy at Harvard said, we're going to do we propose to do a bone marrow transplant on you, which involves so much chemotherapy and radiation. In fact, you will receive as much radiation over a three-day period as people that were less than 1 mile from ground zero at Hiroshima.
Right.
And this is what they call therapy.
I know.
Then they call, one more point, and I'll get off.
Well, very quickly, because I have a couple questions I need to ask you before we go to callers.
And they call, after listening to that, they call Brzezinski a quack.
Yeah, I know.
And that's the danger here, and that's where we are. That's why I loved your Benjamin Rush comment.
Isn't that was a friend of mine that was Edward Fry again. Who
I
pops
want to
up.
Find out where I can get that from you, because that was wonderful.
Maybe I'll send it with the tape.
That would be great.
I want to get the number of the Legal Defense Fund, but I want to clarify something, because I know there are people listening who have relatives who are in desperate straits.
Yeah.
My understanding is the trials are closed. People should not be calling Brzezinski's office or
that's
calling
incorrect.
Me. Oh gosh,
that's totally
okay. So tell us what for those people out there who do have desperately ill loved ones, what's the deal?
Here, the trials are not closed. If you qualify for a clinical trial, by all means, you should call Dr. Brzezinski. The only way you're going to know if you qualify is to call his office, and then they will make a determination. If they feel that you do fit into the parameters required, this is required by the Food and Drug Administration. If you can be qualified, they will have the patients send down their medical records, then those get forwarded to the FDA, and the FDA makes the final determination about who gets admitted.
Okay, but before I give out the office of Dr. Brzezinski's, do you know whether, in fact, that's what they want? Do they want people to call, or are they getting...
Oh, absolutely.
They do? Okay.
We need more
people
there, because the numbers...
All right.
You know, they need
here it comes.
Research
All right.
numbers. Okay.
Steven, shut up for a second. Let me give it. All right. I'm going to put this... You have to wait till the show is over, but I'm going to give it to you now on the air. I just hope that the receptionists over at Dr. Brzezinski's office don't panic.
No, they
one.
Can handle it. Don't
okay. The number to reach Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski's office in Texas is area code 281-596-5333. Again.
Actually, that's not the general number.
Oops.
That's
erase. Okay, what is the general?
It's area code 281-597-0111.
Oh, dear. All right, so again, the number to call Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski is 281-597-0111. Please don't call the other number, because you'll get me into trouble and they'll scream at me.
I think that's Cheryl.
No, I don't think so. Anyway, 281-597-0111, and I will leave this on the front desk of, you know, it's KPFA at 510-848-6767 as usual. In addition, the legal defense number, if you want to call Stephen and get information on how to help, What number is that?
Well, actually, it doesn't reach to me directly.
Okay.
Because we cannot handle all
the calls. All right, just the number for legal.
We respond by mail.
By mail.
We're happy to. And it's a P.O. box.
Okay.
And it's the Burzynski, B-U-R-Z-Y-N-S-K-I, Legal Defense Fund. And it's P.O. box 1770, and the city is Pacific Palisades, P-A-L-I-S-A-D-E-S, California, 90272.
Okay, so if you want to help with the Brzezinski's Legal Defense Fund, you should contact them by mail at P.O. Box, 1770, Pacific Palisades, California, 90272. Okay, now I want to open up the phone.
And there is an 800 number, too.
Okay, well, let me just tell people that they can now join the show.
Oh, great.
At 510-848-4425. Callers, you can now join us with questions about Dr. Brzezinski's therapy and his legal defense and the FDA. You can join us right now on the air by calling 510-848-4425. Remember to turn your radio down before we pick you up. The 800 number for the Legal Defense Fund.
Okay, it's 800-550-1296.
Mm-hmm. Okay, again, the 800 number for the Brzezinski Legal Defense Fund is 1-800-550-1296. Let's move to a few callers. Caller, you're on the air with KPFA. Go ahead.
I guess that's me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I recently was being taken care of by Liz Lipsky,
mm-hmm.
and she recommended glutamine. And
I know. That's why I was asking him those questions. You know what? Hang tight. What I'm going to do is based on this information, I'm going to do some research, and I'll do an editorial about it to follow up.
Okay, great.
Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, some people are using glutamine for irritable bowel syndrome and gastric problems, so I need to sort of check in on that. Let's get another caller on the line. Do we have any more callers? Can we get another caller on the line, please? Thank you. Caller, are you there?
I am.
Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My name is Katie, and I'm calling from Oakland, and I have a hunch that this therapy is only available to people with fairly advanced disease, because I think that's the only people that the FDA lets people
Steven?
Try on.
You know,
true?
It's not, your hunch is about 80% accurate, but there are certain cancers and certain of the INDs, the certain protocols, where with enough urging and enough pressure on the FDA, you can be treated, and that's part of what the patient group is doing.
So shall I call the office anyway? I'm being treated right now with chemotherapy for breast cancer, but
oh yeah, that's one of the cancers.
I've been crazy to not do the chemotherapy.
Yeah, but that's one of the cancers it's working well on. So,
yeah.
So I should just call the office and see if I qualify.
Yeah, 281-597-0111.
All right.
Thanks, caller. Good luck.
Sure, good luck.
Let's get another caller on the line. Caller, are you there? This is KPFA. Do we have a caller on the line? Hello, caller. Try another one, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Arthur Stokes III. I'm a legislative analyst, and I immediately perceived the legal remedy that is possible here. I will call the number in Pacific Palisades, but essentially, the term interstate commerce does not mean what people think it does. The codes must be decoded, and the FDA is hiding behind that.
Right.
It means transit from a federal area to a federal area, and only federal areas. And the United States codes are defined as states. We are not in the state of California if you're in Berkeley, according to the law, in fact. I will make that clear.
Stephen, any comment?
Well, you know, it's interesting because that's one probably very effective way of looking at it. We have maintained as part of the defense of Dr. Brzezinski that the commerce was done in the state of Texas. The patients essentially went there, got the drug, and then the commerce is done. What they do with the drug afterwards is their own business. So all of the patients that were allowed to testify, including my wife, there were 19 patients that were allowed to testify in Dr. Brzezinski's behalf, all said that they were the ones that transported the drug out of the state of Texas.
That is also true, but let me clarify for you. Am I still on?
Yes.
In California, and I'm sure the other federalized states are the same, the words in this state or in the state, Revenue and Taxation Code 60017, mean areas owned by or ceded to the United States. In fact, Dr. Brzezinski's clients were not in the state of Texas as thus defined. I could go on in other examples. For instance, for related reasons, the Japanese do not know why they were interned during World War II. The 14th Amendment attorneys do not know or will not allow them to know the restriction of the federal law. And
okay.
Let me cite something which is
Well, caller, you know what might be...
I know something that no one will tell you, so allow me to continue briefly, please.
Well, what I was going to suggest is that you type a letter and send it to the defense fund.
I am defending people against the Internal Revenue Service. Allow me to continue one sentence.
Absolutely.
Act of Congress, from Title 18, Rules of Criminal Procedure. Act of Congress includes, which in law means includes only that which follows. Includes any act of Congress locally applicable to and enforced in the District of Columbia, in Puerto Rico, in a territory, or in an insular possession.
I love
the 50 states were not mentioned.
Arthur, would you do me a favor?
Yes.
Would you type up, just you don't even have to put that in there, but just say
you have email?
KPFA,
mm-hmm.
Send it to the post office box with your phone number, and I would like to talk to you at length about this.
It does you credit. Thank you.
Very.
Thank you for your call. Please go ahead and contact them. Do you have the P.O. box, caller?
Thank you.
Did you get...
Yes.
Did you get the P.O.
box? P.O. box 1770.
Stephen, take my number.
Okay. No, I don't want you to give your number on the air, please.
Okay.
Did you get the P.O. box number?
P.O. box 1770.
Great, Pacific Palisades.
And I will not use the federalized address, but you will get it.
Okay, great.
Thanks for your call. Okay. Do we have any other callers on the line here? Are we out of callers? We have open lines. We can take a couple more callers. It's 510-848-4425 if people want to join the show. Again, 848-4425 and the 510 if people... There we go. Okay, let's get this caller on the air. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. I was wondering, I had heard at one point that only something like 17 or 20% of all cancers are genetic, and most of them are actually environmentally caused. So how does that work with the treatment?
Oh, well, we don't have the doctor on with us anymore.
We don't really know.
I have addressed this with the doctor at length over the last 7 years, and basically, he does not really know or purport to know what the causes of cancer are. He'll be the first to admit that there are certainly a genetic component to it, and there is certainly an environmental component, whether it be viral, bacterial in nature, environmental poisoning, electromagnetic fields. It could be any of those. What anti-neoplastins do, though, is they basically reprogram the genetic material of the errant cells, the malignant cells, and the thing that differentiates a malignant cell from a normal cell is malignant cells are immortal. They divide and they live forever, and you have to basically reverse that program, and it's what Brzezinski calls programmed cell death. And the interesting part is he's very
quickly,
humble.
Quickly, because we're out of time.
Pardon me?
Very quickly, because we're out of time.
I would just refer the caller and your listeners to the December 23rd Newsweek magazine. Front cover is the P53 cancer killer gene. That was last year, 1996, and Brzezinski postulates the existence of the P53, called it the tumor suppressor gene, in 1965 in his PhD.
Great. Yeah, well, he's brilliant. Caller, I want to thank you for your call. And Stephen, I want to thank you again so much for taking the time, being so patient with us in the beginning.
No problem.
The information that we gave out in terms of who to contact and where we'll be at the front desk of KPFA at 510-848-6767, as soon as I get a chance to run up there and give it to them, please call them for this information instead of me. Stephen, thank you so much.
Thank you for this opportunity.
You betcha.
We really appreciate it.
Well, we'll get you some help.
Great. Thank you.
Uh-huh. So just to let you know, again, the information is at the front desk. If you want a tape of today's show, or if you need to talk to me about something else, you can reach my office during normal business hours, and that's 707-769-1458. Again, for tapes of the show, including today's show, 707-769-1458. If you'd like to get a list of available tapes of this show, other shows, send me a business-size self-addressed stamped envelope, and that's to P.O. Box 2714, Petaluma, 94953. I want to thank the callers who participated in the show. I want to let you know that next week I will be interviewing Qigong master and acupuncturist. Now, this is someone who's been a Qigong master for 30 years, Dr. Effie Chow. She's co-author of Miracle Healing from China, Qigong. And I want to thank Jan Michaels for boarding the show today. I'm Lena Berman. This has been your own health and fitness talk show on KPFA 94.1 FM. We'll see you next week.